Hi, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of On The Box for 2017. We are back from our Christmas and New Year's... I don't remember much of what happened over New Year's and Christmas. It was all kind of a blur, surrounded by screaming children, screaming for toys, and big fat guys in red suits. How was yours?
I think I can legally define mine as a hibernation...
Have you taken the next step in becoming a bear?
I mean, pretty much. I basically stuffed my face with food and drink and then went to sleep for a while.
What about you?
Oh. It was a good holiday.
Yeah. What about you, Andy?
Pretty much the same with the food.
So
as I you can get enough food on Christmas.
Yeah. As you can tell, I am Rob. I'm back. And with me are the wonderful Andrew and the...
That's me.
Yes. And the ever-amazing, ever-so-understated Andy.
That's a good name.
The ever so understated Andy.
I haven't been given that one before.
Oh, you do have a talent for understatement.
What do you mean?
Yeah. So,
Also, I feel like I should point out, just to live up to the stereotype you guys have made for me, we had a cheese board over Christmas.
Oh, God.
Oh, that is posh.
Well, not really. Okay, Andrew, maybe you can explain this to me. Why a cheese board over Christmas?
Because cheese is delicious and Christmas is the time for special festive cheeses.
But why the board? Why don't you just buy the cheese?
But then what do you put the cheese on, Andy? Do you just eat it off the floor? Is that what you do? Is that what you poor people do?
Like Philistines.
God.
Paper plates. All the way.
Now, my question is...
Andy Reeve. You do not eat the Wensleydale with cranberries in it off a paper plate.
My question was more, I don't understand how cheese and Christmas are associated.
I understand. Do you get Christmas cheeses?
No, I understand.
It's corporate takeover of an originally pagan holiday.
Yeah, I understand, you know, the desire to eat lots of delicious food, and I applaud it, you know. Obviously, I applaud it. Given how I'm built, mainly because I'm built for comfort, not for speed.
But anyway, to answer your question, Rob.
Yes.
Basically, what you have to do is you have to play a little game in the shop. What you do is you look at some food and say, is this food appropriate for Christmas? And the answer is yes.
And that's to all food.
Yes.
Even the stuff you wouldn't normally eat. For some reason, I've seen people eating stuff that they're allergic to. Over Christmas, I'm like, why are you eating that? You're allergic to it. And they go, because it's Christmas.
It's okay, the festive magic will make you not die from milk.
Yeah. Right. Having a guy who's allergic to peanuts eating nut brittle.
It's tradition, you gotta.
Yeah, and the excuse literally was, it's Christmas. So, anyway, after the hospital visit, he was perfectly fine, although he did get shouted at by the doctor.
So you say that, but all I'm imagining now is just the doctor yelling out, it's Christmas!
Probably. Just getting the blurb out of the way, we are part of the Geek Show Podcast Network, and if you like what we do, because we like what we do, but if you like what we do, then show your support, make a donation using the PayPal button, or buy one of our lovely pieces of merchandise from our shop. Both those things can be found on our website, thegeekshow.co.uk, and you can also contact us for whatever reason on studio@thegeekshow.co.uk, or find us on Facebook, Twitter, or Google+, or various other places on the internet. Just Google us. Now we're on to a look back at 2016, kind of the best and the worst for us, I suppose we'd say.
The general tone.
So what were some of the highlights of 2016 in terms of TV for you guys?
No doubt, Andrew, you're going to be pushed towards more superhero stuff, aren't you?
Oh, even better than that, what I'm actually going to do is immediately ruin the format of the show by talking about things that I haven't actually talked about before.
That's fine.
Because I feel like what was an utter travesty last year is that I never got a chance to talk about Human Series 2.
Yeah, and I was surprised that you didn't actually talk about it.
Because it's one of those things where I kept assuming, no, it's fine, I'll talk about it next week.
Yeah.
Because I've got something more pressing to talk about this week. And then Christmas happened. But yeah, Human Series 2, it was really good.
I've read articles that say it's the closest we've seen to the singularity on TV. Do you know what the singularity is? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, when like humans and robots are wand, all is indistinguishable.
Yeah. It's a
Shepherd with the green button to merge the Reapers with humanity and all the other alien races.
Yeah. It's a better example of the singularity as well than Westworld. Because I watched some Westworld and I was, number one, I was disappointed because there was no Yul Brynner. And when I think of Westworld, my first thought is Yul Brynner.
Yeah, because he's the man in black.
Yeah. And my second opinion about Westworld was, to use Andy's phrases, it was all right. But it was no humans.
Yeah, I've heard kind of mixed things about Westworld. But yeah, humans is really good.
Yes.
I think what makes the characters in it so good are that they're so human. Oh, no. In my smugness, I knocked my microphone.
Do you know when you said that, I just had this mental image of you twirling your mustache.
I should grow a mustache for that very purpose.
Yeah. It's just that human. It's a twirly mustache moment.
Yeah. I joke, but like the characters are really so relatable.
They are, absolutely.
It just, it deals with so many themes of like what it actually means to be alive.
Yeah.
Like, I think one of my favorite of the side plots is one of the robots who becomes sentient. And actually decides they don't like being sentient and would rather just go back to being a mindless robot. Because that's just one of those things you don't see that often.
See, I thought that was a great thing to include. Just the whole idea of sentience just not being for everybody.
Yeah, and I think kind of that was the theme of this series, is that sometimes sentience can be a burden.
Yeah.
Because the main villain, Hester, she was incredible. Just the idea that she's like, she's a worker robot who's gone through so much abuse, like just people hurling things and pushing her downstairs and stuff.
Yeah.
That she becomes sentient and she just hates humans.
Yeah.
Mm.
I mean, the other thing I think is special about humans, both series, is that you have this spectrum of characters. Not just amongst the robots, but amongst the humans as well.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. The idea of, like, I can't remember what the official name for it was, but of children getting developmental disorders.
Yes.
Where they begin associating more with the robots than the humans.
Yeah.
Because at a young age, they can't tell the difference. That was such a genius story idea.
Yeah. What about you, Andy?
Well, I'll start off with what I found. One of the things I found really good this year, before we get into the embarrassments of last year. But I think one show that really stood out for me, and it surprised me with how good it was Red Dwarf this year.
Are you sure it's this year, Andy? We are recording in, I was going to say, we're a week into 2017.
Andy's looked ahead to the future. And also he's got a grim message for us.
Well, it is this year as well, but...
No, it isn't. This is 2017.
Yes, it is. There's last year's, which was the one I'm on about now.
Right, okay.
Well, this year is Red Dwarf 12.
Oh, Andy.
But anyway.
The human race isn't going to make it to Red Dwarf 12.
Anyway, no doubt if you've seen it, Rob, you'll probably think roughly the same. Same with you, Andrew. I went into watching this series expecting it to be a lot worse than Red Dwarf 10 was.
Okay.
I expected it to be pretty much, you know, a show that's been on too long, even though I love the show.
Yeah.
But I was really surprised. It was very dark. It was, the plot lines was both serious but also absolutely hilarious. And it's also the first ever Red Dwarf season, or series, as we're in the UK, that has been rated a 15.
Really?
So, I think it's really come out of its shell again.
It got rated a 15.
It's the DVD is a 15. It's the first one that actually has been.
Okay.
So see, I was going to say that sounds about right for like the older series, but I guess the older series were never that graphic, were they? Really, they were more innuendo.
I mean, there was an episode which it was pretty terrifying for all the wrong reasons, and it was the Rimmer Monster. If anybody watched it,
you're going to have to jog my memory.
It basically, there was a printer that printed out members of the crew, and Rimmer decided to print out multiple versions of himself, and basically they all got jammed in the printer, and you got this weird Rimmer monster of about 8 or 9 Rimmers. See, and it was absolutely hilarious.
See, this is what I like is the fact that Red Dwarf has kind of gone back to the humour that it used to have.
I was literally about to say that sounds a lot like an old school Red Dwarf episode.
Yeah, it just takes something completely mundane and turns it into comedy. You know, just a paper jam in a printer and turns it into something that works.
Or the episode where Kat has to birth the polymorph. That's quite graphic as well. Anyway, that was a major highlight, I think, of last year.
Okay. I'm going to start off on the opposite foot to you guys. I'm going to start off with a disappointment from last year. And I'll be honest, my main disappointment with last year was Supergirl.
Oh.
It's Ally McBeal with superpowers.
See, I've actually heard though that it kind of gets better towards the end of Series 1.
It does, and it doesn't. It gets better, but what you've got to think about is, if the end of Series 1 is better, then how bad was the rest of it? Do you see what I mean? I mean,
so it's kind of better in the way that getting shot in the knees is better than being shot in the face.
Yes, exactly. It's that kind of better. See, my main problem with Supergirl is that it's... Okay, I understand the purpose of Supergirl. I understand that they're trying to get more of the female audience using it, but I just think it's being used in a little bit in the wrong way. And you have Supergirl, and then she's not allowed to be Supergirl in the way that Superman is allowed to be Superman. I was going to say Superman is allowed to be Supergirl.
We live in a progressive society, Rob. If Superman wants to be Supergirl, that's his choice.
That's the next season.
And he should feel empowered doing it.
Right, let's put it this way. In the Supergirl series, right... If you look at Superman, Superman is Superman, and he's off by himself. He's got his Fortress of Solitude and everything like that. He goes back and sees his parents every so often. He hangs out with Lois, and he's got his own job. He's got his own career, and he's very successful in his own job and his own career, yeah? But Supergirl isn't allowed to be Supergirl or Superwoman, as you would obviously think she is, but Superwoman is somebody else. I think it's Lois Lane in the comics, isn't it?
That's a whole thing.
Yeah, that's a whole thing for another show. But anyway, Supergirl isn't allowed to be Supergirl without supervision, right? So she has to answer to her parents. Her sister is working for some secret government organization that keeps tabs on aliens on Earth, and she now has to work with that government organization to combat alien threats to Earth. And so she's not allowed to be Supergirl without their say-so. You're like, well, hang on. Isn't that kind of double standards?
That sounds very Metroid Other M.
Yeah, it is very Metroid Other M. And I really didn't like Metroid Other M. Because they took Samus, who's a badass, and turned her into...
into a whiny girly girl.
With daddy issues. So, yeah.
Which is wrong, because... If Samus Aran's daddy tried to mess with her, she'd just blow his face off with her arm cannon.
Yeah. This is Samus Aran.
Because y'all don't mess with Samus Aran.
Exactly. You know?
She shoots space pterodactyls for fun.
Exactly. So, yeah, Supergirl was one of my disappointments of the year. It's just a disappointment, and I'm constantly disappointed with Supergirl, not just in terms of the TV series. My main concern was that they were going to do like a TV version of the horrible, horrible, horrible movie. You remember the Supergirl movie?
I remember sort of half watching it, realizing it was terrible, and then stopping watching it.
Yep. That was my main concern, and thankfully it's not that. But they're basically taking Supergirl and trying to do what they've done with The Flash and Arrow, and basically kind of build this team around Supergirl. You're like, well, no, Supergirl is just Supergirl. She doesn't need supervision, and she doesn't need a team.
And hey, if we're mentioning Flash and, well, I assume Arrow, I think kind of all that DC superhero CW stuff.
Yeah.
That's kind of disappointing. Because, well, I say all of it, it's kind of Arrow I gave up on last series because it was garbage.
Yep.
And this year I've kind of slowly died off on The Flash.
I'm the same.
I mean, it started off fairly okay. There was all this stuff about Flash creating an alternate timeline, and then he had to fight some more villains and what such. But I think the moment, like, I switched off when it was revealed. So the main villain in the series was a guy called Dr. Alchemy, and partway through, Flash kind of finally broke into his base and met the real villain behind the villain, who was a guy named Savitar, who is the god of speed.
Yeah.
And he's another The Flash, but a bad guy. And he's faster than The Flash.
So The Flash has to go faster.
The only way that The Flash can beat him is if he gets faster than ever before.
Yep.
Just like series one and two.
It's just kind of, right, you and I had this discussion before, I think on 4Panel, didn't we, Andrew? Where we said The Flash literally could solve all crime in his city in, what, half a day?
Yeah, because that was going to be my other point, that it's still really apparent that, like, every single plot line is caused by The Flash being just massively incompetent.
Yeah, I mean, he runs up to the bad guy, and instead of running straight to the bad guy who doesn't know he's coming, right, and punching him in the face, knocking him out, and then taking whatever weapon or superpower the bad guy has, the Flash runs up to them and says, "Stop! It's the Flash!" And then gets into a fight.
Stop! You won't be able to do the crimes if I stand here giving you an easy target to hit.
Yeah. And that... for a while I was applauding what DC were doing with the CW and their TV shows, but that was mainly because Marvel were really dropping the ball with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, Marvel kind of stumbled at the first hurdle.
Yeah, but then they came out fighting.
Yeah, because then they started dropping them Netflix bombs.
Yep, and DC have been trying to play catch-up ever since.
I think the problem with, like, all the series is that none of them seem to really have a long-term plan.
No, they don't.
So it's kind of just the same plot lines over and over again, with nothing really changing.
I mean, Legends of Tomorrow, I watched some of Legends of Tomorrow, and...
that exists.
Yeah, it was fun for a while, but then, you know, I just kind of got bored of it because they just kept doing the same thing over and over again. And it's the same reason why I got bored of Doctor Who.
Yeah, plus I think they have the same problem of trying to make a show featuring time travel that isn't really about time travel.
Yeah.
It's just 90% massive gaping plot holes.
See, the one show that I know that was about time travel but wasn't about time travel, you know, the time travel was just a storytelling tool, but it still worked, was Quantum Leap.
Mm. Yeah, because I think that kind of took the right approach.
Yeah.
To being... Sam Beckett can travel through time because he can.
Yeah.
And that's just a narrative device to set up adventures in this other world.
Well, yeah, he just jumps into different people's bodies and, you know, fixes their lives, and then he's off again. But
So, but the problem with like Legends of Tomorrow is it kind of then it tries to have these bigger storylines where it's like, but then we can't travel to here because paradoxes maybe or something, except that then they do the thing and it's fine anyway.
Well, do you remember the final episode of Quantum Leap?
Not in great detail.
The final episode of Quantum Leap was probably the best I've seen the consequences of time travel handled in movies or in TV.
Oh yeah, another whole thing with like the bit that everyone misinterprets with Sam Beckett never returned home.
Yeah.
That's because he chose not to, people. It's a happy ending. He found a higher purpose.
Yeah. Well, not only that, he kind of couldn't because his last leap was actually, you remember Al?
No, because the whole point of the final episode was he met the bartender who's basically God.
Yeah.
Who told him that he could go home anytime he wanted.
Oh yeah, he did, didn't he? But the thing is, the final episode was about Al because he basically fixed Al's life, didn't he?
Yeah, because he travelled back and, like, told his wife, was it?
Yeah, but I think...
The important thing.
I think Sam realised that if he went back and basically went home, then all he'd done would be undone and Al's life would be destroyed again.
No, see, I never thought that was it. I thought it was more... He just realised he can do more good jumping through time, fixing problems, than he can by just going home and living out his life.
See, this is the thing. This is one of the reasons why I like the ending. We're still discussing it, you know, and we have differing opinions. Yeah. That's a good ending.
Yeah, it is a good ending.
But anyway, Andrew, what about you? Do you have any more, or move on to Andy?
Well, I had one more good thing that I wanted to talk about.
Okay.
Just to hog all the limelight. this is something that actually came out, I think, after we went on a break.
Yeah.
And it was on Netflix. It's Gently's Holistic Detective Agency.
Yes.
Which, oh my god, was obscenely good.
Wasn't that, I've forgotten his name. Who was playing Dirk Gently?
It was Samuel Barnett.
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah, some new guy who... Yeah, he was interesting, because it was kind of Dirk Gently, but reinterpreted as more of kind of like a childlike character.
Yeah.
It's like he was just like kind of this innocent, wacky guy, kind of just wanders around the world getting into circumstances because everything is interconnected. This is interesting because the series is kind of more the general ideas of the book Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency rather than a straight up adaptation.
Yeah.
Which I think probably works better than trying to like just go straight for the book.
See, I like that approach.
Plus, it's like it's done by Max Landis, who has some amazing ideas of his own.
Yeah.
So I think it's definitely better that he's got more wiggle room to apply some of his ideas.
Yeah.
Because he made up just the most amazing character. She's a woman named Bart.
Yeah.
Who is a holistic assassin. So she goes around killing random people. Whoever she kills, that was her target. And that was kind of the person she was meant to kill.
See, that's just amazing as a character. And as a device.
It is such a brilliant concept. And then she's got all these other quirks of, like, she's been doing this for so long, like, she has no concept of how radio works. Because, like, she ends up making a friend, and she's just completely amazed when he knows what the song on the radio is. Because she thinks it's just, like, there's a microphone in a room somewhere, and there's a band playing live, and that's getting transmitted through the radio.
Cool. What about you, Andy?
Well, I want to avoid rehashing series which we've already talked about. Two obvious ones being, obviously, Game of Thrones and Walking Dead. I want to quickly brush past those.
Okay.
Also, Walking Dead was naff.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought... They're both basically... They're developing a lot faster than what they should be. Game of Thrones is going, obviously, towards an intended end. But what did you all think for both of these this year? Obviously, Walking Dead doesn't seem to have triggered both of your fancies.
I lost interest in Walking Dead around season 2.
That's quite a while back.
I've only seen the first episode of this series of The Walking Dead, and that was the point where I finally decided, no, I'm done with this series.
I lost interest around season...
I don't care anymore.
Yeah, I lost interest around season 2 when I realized that The Walking Dead is expressly promoting bad parenting. I'm sorry, but if you're in the middle of a zombie apocalypse and you have a young daughter called Sophia, the last thing that you're going to do, the last thing that you want to do, is let go of her hand and let her go wandering off by herself, and then spend the entirety of the season looking for her when she's obviously dead.
Mm. Also, you know, Rick, if you just lock the doors and windows, Carl can't get out the house.
Yeah.
It's an easy solution, man.
Also, try not to leave the baby in the house by itself.
I do think it has picked up as the season has went on this year. But as you say, on the, I think it was the 7th episode, you have a scene where Negan picks up Judith, and it's like very uncomfortable. That's another bad parenting.
So, yeah, what about Game of Thrones then?
Game of Thrones, good this series. Microphone, bad.
So it's doing its own thing and breaking away from the books then, is it?
Yeah, and I think that's helping it a lot.
Considering it doesn't have a book to break away from at the minute. and that bit...
Yeah, but what I mean is what I keep trying to explain, and then my microphone decides it's not a valid point, is that I think in Series 5, what it was trying to do too much of is sort of drag things out, sort of try and maybe guess a bit where the books are going. Whereas now they've just decided, okay, this is the end point we're trying to reach to. We'll just make our own path there.
Mm.
See,
I
applaud the fact that it's gone down that route. And the main reason I applaud it is because there are other talented writers out there than George R. R. Martin. And
Ger-Martin.
Yeah, Ger-Martin. And just because he's written all these books about Game of Thrones, you know, he's reached a point where there is no story. So let someone else take over for the TV series. It doesn't have to be him. Tell a different story. It'll add more spice to the books and to the TV series to have two diverting paths.
I'm not sure if that's something I wholly agree with, but
I've seen it work.
Like, have another drawn-out, protracted argument about it.
No. It's just I've seen it work with something like Full Metal Alchemist, where the story was only up to a certain point, and so they did the rest of the series just from the minds of the writers.
Japanese mangoes.
I actually prefer the original adaptation, which deviated wildly from the story. So, anyway, my turn, is it?
But yeah, no. Yes. Like, the one thing I did want to say is controversially, yeah, I didn't like Battle of the Bastards.
Hey, that made history, apparently, that episode. I don't know how.
What, the fact that you
It was like the most expensive episode of a TV show or something.
See, I thought it was going to be the episode that had the most illegitimate children with swords on screen at the same time.
But basically, it was the episode before the episode that basically made your head hurt really badly, that last episode.
The episode before the episode?
The final episode.
Yeah.
Basically just made my head hurt. I got the end and I'm thinking, what happened?
And I'm confused, because you said the episode before the episode made your head hurt, and now you're talking about the final episode. Which one is it?
No,
the final episode made his head hurt, but the Battle of the Bastards was the episode before that episode.
Ah, yeah. Right, okay. Well, right. Okay, now I understand.
Also, Jon Snow is a terrible commander and he should be dead.
Hang on, isn't he dead?
He got better, Rob.
Oh, yeah, that woman in red thing brought him back to life, didn't she? Which confused the bejesus out of me. All right, moving on to me then, and a disappointment. I've already mentioned this, but I might as well clarify why it's disappointing. Aside from the lack of Yul Brynner and the fact that it's nowhere near as gripping as the movie, Westworld. It just drags. And it drags, and it drags, and it drags. And, right, you know when you have something that's supposed to be sci-fi with a little bit of horror thrown in there? Westworld is really good. The TV series is really good at removing tension. It doesn't wrap it up, it removes it. And I was hoping for more from this series. In terms of the production, in terms of it, the, you know, the effects and stuff like that, it's great. It's just bland at the same time.
Mm.
You know? You've got characters who are trying to be intense, but it's difficult to be intense when everybody around you just looks like they're wearing, you know, big duvets and getting warm for the winter. You know, everybody around them looks comfortable and, you know, there's laughter and chatting and stuff like that. And then, you know, all of a sudden it's supposed to go into this tense action scene or this tense scene. And the transitions just don't really work. And it's a Common Our Garden story about robots going a bit mad, gaining a little bit of sentience, becoming a little bit self-aware, going a bit mad, killing people. Fine. I've seen that in Humans. I've seen that in loads of other things. You know, I saw that in Ex Machina.
iRobot.
Yeah, iRobot. Saw that in all sorts. What's so special about Westworld? Oh, yeah, it's the Old West. Oh, goody. Do you see what I mean?
Hmm.
Andy?
Apparently, though, it got quite a lot of good reviews, wasn't it?
It was mixed reviews. There were people who didn't like it at all. I just find it bland. You know, it's watchable, but it's bland.
Mm.
But then again, I am a sci-fi nerd, so, you know, I'm looking at it with... I'm basically picking it apart with sci-fi tweezers. I don't know what sci-fi tweezers are, but, you know. Andrew?
Yes, you probably made some really good points there. And I maybe agree with them. I don't know. My internet basically cut out for all of that.
That's okay.
But so... I do have terrifyingly bad news.
Oh?
No?
Westworld isn't on Netflix. And on Amazon, it's like, it's only rentable.
It's only rentable?
It's not on Amazon Prime. What do I pay you for Amazon if I can't Jewel Brynner be a badass cowboy?
Isn't it a Sky thing, Westworld?
Oh, no, I meant Westworld the movie. And,
yeah, Westworld the movie.
Ah.
The movie's great. The movie's just brilliant. It's classic. Anyway, moving on to you again.
That's what I was going to ask. Rob, do they still have Medieval World in Westworld the TV show?
There's kind of hints.
They had like an ancient Greek world as well, didn't they?
Sorry?
No, it was Romans. They had Romans as well in the movie, didn't they?
Yeah. Because it wasn't just Westworld. Westworld was just one part of a bigger amusement thing.
Yeah, but no, I just remember, because that's my favourite bit of Westworld, is where you've got, like, the fat guy in Medieval World who thinks he's, like, this awesome knight, but then the robots go crazy and he tries to sword fight with, like, the knight robot and it just stabs him right in the stomach.
Yep. Anyway, moving on to you, Andrew.
Well, actually, I think, mate, I will pass back over to Andy since... I've already done a bunch of stuff that I was disappointed with, and then went on to do Dirk Gently as well.
Okay.
Well, this one has to be mentioned.
Okay.
This was the embarrassment of last year. Can anybody guess what the embarrassment of last year was?
Is it the news?
No, it's nothing political.
It's nothing political.
It wasn't.
Not even political. It's like the constant unending barrage of all my favourite celebrities being dead.
Hmm. That's put the story I was gonna talk about to a very depressing end.
Which one's that?
Well, I was gonna say the embarrassment of Top Gear this year.
We
have to mention it.
Yeah.
Speaking of things that are dead. Also, I've just googled best TV 2016 and it brought me with a picture of Samsung. That's not what I wanted, Google.
Brilliant.
Yeah, Top Gear. I mean, Top Gear now is kind of like when you're at a wedding and your dad decides to bust some funky moves on the dance floor because he's had a few too many.
I think if this is one of the TV shows that I wish got bought out by another channel, I'd have wanted Channel 4 to buy it and then have the crew from The Last Leg do it, because they have more of a chemistry than quite a lot of people at the minute.
Yeah. on the subject of shows on BBC, the one that I found disappointing this year was Robot Wars.
Ah.
I mean, I mentioned it on the show. I just found it far too sanitized, and the, you know, having Darrow O'Brien as host, yeah, fine, all well and good, but I think he's not the right host for it. He does a good job, and I like Darrow O'Brien, but I think you need somebody who's, you need, what's his face from Scrappy Challenge?
Yeah, Robert Llewellyn would be good.
And Angela Scanlon was great, but if you remember, I mentioned BattleBots, the American kind of Robot Wars, and they have this whole thing where, and they used to do this in the old Robot Wars, they used to drive the robots into the ring, or basically announce it in the ring, and they'd say, you know, on this and this, and you basically had a bit of a fanfare about it. And it was like, you know, in wrestling, when they're coming down the ramp, you know, and they have their own theme tune, stuff like that. It's a bit of fanfare for the robots, get the crowd going a little bit, and get the viewers going a little bit. But in this, it was just, on this corner, we got this, on this corner, we got this, 3, 2, 1, activate. And then they just, dare I say, fighting? You see? And it just kind of, yeah, okay, it's a bit too sanitized, it's a bit too clean. Robot Wars needs to be grimy. It needs to be a little bit dirty. It needs to be more kind of the block in his garden shed. Doing something.
The budget
something.
Is too much.
I think they've just tried to make it too slick. And it's kind of my problem with things like Doctor Who and stuff like that. When something becomes too slick, it just becomes kind of bland.
I think it's a problem that we don't really have the idea of something being charmingly low budget anymore.
Yeah.
I honestly think the king of low budget TV shows is Dave, to be honest.
It is. But I mean, if you remember.
Yeah, but even that, is there anything on Dave that's really like properly low budget?
No. No.
Like, you've got stuff like Dave Gorman, but that's more, I would say, like minimalist.
Yeah. It's not true low budget.
Brilliant, though.
Think about it like this, Andy. You remember Red Dwarf Series 9, I think it was. Series 9 and 10, was it? Where
Back to Earth, you mean?
Yeah.
I know. Yeah.
And how slick was that?
Mm.
And how much did we hate it?
Yeah, there is no Back to Earth. That's like a three-part special that never happened.
Okay, you thought never happened. That's the one where, like, that they went to the house of the writers of, like, Red Dwarf and started typing on a typewriter, like, it ended up affecting what they were doing in the real world, right? That happened. That wasn't, like, weird fever dream I had.
Yeah, and they went to the Coronation Street to hunt down Craig Charles.
Yeah.
Yeah, that really did happen.
But,
See, when you say they went to Coronation Street to hunt down Craig Charles, I've just got this image of Rob Grant and Doug Naylor with, like, trapper's nets and stuff like that, and spears, just walking down to the Rover's Return.
On the other hand, though, Dave has, two unique shows, which I think are absolutely brilliant. One, Taskmaster, which is due for a third series in the space of 6 months.
Okay.
Within the next 2 months or so. And Darrow O'Brien's Go 8-Bit, which is basically a guest of 4 sat playing games, and it's brilliant.
See, that's what I think Darrow O'Brien does better, is something like Go 8-Bit or Mock the Week or something like that, kind of a panel show type thing. I just think that when he's with just the common people, as I shall call them, you know, the robot builders, they're a little bit overawed. They're going, it's Darrow O'Brien, talking to Darrow O'Brien.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Robot Wars was one of my disappointments of the year.
And my BBC disappointment of the year was...
Yeah?
Bake Off. There's no more Bake Off.
Yeah, there's no more
Bake Off world.
Yeah, we are living in a post-Bake Off world. It's sad. It's sad.
And especially when they did the Christmas special, and then they had the cakes that said goodbye and thank you, that I got a bit teary-eyed.
Yeah. Do you know what was one of my good points of the year, one of my highlights of the year?
Was it cake?
No. It was John Berenthal.
Oh. Oh, such a good Punisher.
Yes. Daredevil Season 2.
Mm.
Introducing...
Let's just lump Daredevil Series 2 and Luke Cage together.
Yeah, a Daredevil
they
Series 2.
They were both the bomb.
Yeah, except for the ending of Luke Cage was a little bit weak, but the rest of it was strong. You know?
Yeah, it's definitely like the final fight for Luke Cage was kind of meh.
Yeah,
but certainly not like ruined what was a very awesome series.
Yes, and Luke Cage was, I think, a revelation. Just this whole idea of the black superhero, but the street level one, and I absolutely adore what's his name? I forgot his name.
It's Mike Coulter, I believe.
Yeah, Michael Coulter. Mike Coulter. He is just brilliant as Luke Cage.
Yeah, because he is like a human glacier.
Yeah. And that whole bit, that still gets me, you know, when he's just escaped from the prison and he looks in the...
I look like a damn fool.
It's just the best.
I think that might be one of the single best delivered lines I've ever seen.
Yeah. But Daredevil Season 2 really took what they did in Series 1 and really built on it, I thought. You know, they introduced the Punisher, and Jon Bernthal was so awesome as the Punisher, he's getting his own series.
Yeah. I like that they know how to be serious, but also say, okay, Daredevil's going to fight some ninjas now.
Yeah.
Like, they don't feel the need to try and make it so it's, oh, they're kind of like ninjas, but they're definitely not ninjas. It's like, it's not afraid to be a superhero show.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the reasons I love Daredevil. That and the whole idea that Daredevil is just one bad day away from being Punisher. I love the dynamic between the two characters, though.
Yeah, kind of like at the end when they've got that sort of grudging respect for each other.
Yeah, I thought that was just the best. It was really done well. It's a story told really well, I thought. So, yeah. Daredevil Season 2 is one of my picks of the year, along with Luke Cage.
And I've got another one, which I had to check, and it does technically qualify.
Oh.
Because it started in 2015 and finished in 2016, but I've only started watching it now.
Okay.
Season 3 of Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yes! How could we
forget? So funny.
How could we forget Brooklyn Nine-Nine?
I think it's one of those amazing shows that's just got more funnier.
Yeah.
And yes, I said more funnier.
Yeah.
I'm going to own it.
That's fine. Yeah. Brooklyn Nine-Nine is one of those really odd shows that is very kind of, it sneaks past everybody. Everybody seems to forget that Brooklyn Nine-Nine is the thing. And then it sneaks up on you and boom, hilarity, boom, comedy.
It basically is TV Christmas.
Yeah.
So like for most of the year, you don't really think about it. But when it's on, it's a super special occasion.
Yeah, I mean, you could be channel hopping and Brooklyn Nine-Nine's on. You know, you channel hop to Brooklyn Nine-Nine, you just sit there going, yeah, I've got something to watch now. And every episode is enjoyable.
That's bit for me, is I've started watching Season 3 on Netflix.
Yeah.
Season 4 has just started on TV. So I can just, like, have two series in a row.
Yeah. Brooklyn Nine-Nine does not have a wasted character. And I think that's one of the glorious things about it. Every character is special in the way that schools are sometimes special.
Yeah, like I feel like on a lot of other shows, someone like Captain Holt would just be there to kind of be the overly serious guy when everyone's trying to be goofy.
Yeah.
But in this, he's so good.
Do you know what I realised Brooklyn Nine-Nine was? Brooklyn Nine-Nine... Sorry, or what it is, I should say. Brooklyn Nine-Nine is every single Police Academy movie done right.
Yeah, because it's like Police Academy if it knew what police are actually kind of like.
And actually knew what comedy was.
Made that a bit wacky.
Yeah. You know, if it knew what police did and actually knew what comedy was. So, yeah.
See, I've made a terrible mistake.
What?
Because I accidentally Googled Brooklyn Nine-Nine best bits as kind of a jog my memory for some of the funniest bits. But now I'm trying to have, like, stifle so many giggles. Yeah. Like, at the bottom, you've just got the bit with Captain Holt saying, "You've helped me find my smile." And then, like, it cuts to him slightly less frowning than before.
Yes.
Which actually does remind me of, like, one of my favourite bits of this series.
What?
Is it one of the opening jokes where Captain Holt's husband is in Paris and he sent him a gift basket of, like, chocolate and cheese and stuff.
Yeah.
But everyone else kind of eats it without realising. And so hastily replace it. Like, Holt reopens it and goes, pencils, a stapler. He knows me so well.
See, that oh, makes
sense. Like, one of my other best lines is like Gina telling him, you wouldn't tell the sky to not be blue. And then he says, actually, I prefer it to be tan. It's my favourite colour. It's no nonsense.
I love the argument of there's an argument over food. I can't remember exactly how it goes, but it ends with the line, it's a tasty treat for all ages. And I just love that line. It's a tasty treat for all ages, just kills me.
See, I remember that line, but I can't remember where it's from.
See, it's just the way she did. Think,
like, my favorite Brooklyn Nine-Nine moment is Captain Holt picking his code name for the secret mission as Velvet Thunder.
Yes.
I'm going to have to watch this sometime.
Oh, you do.
Absolutely.
Seriously, you do. You do. Brooklyn Nine-Nine is, if there was a TV series that deserved to generate memes, it would be Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I mean, do you remember the bit, Andrew, when Terry Crews became Scary Terry?
Yes, because that's one of the bits on the list I'm looking at. I just got Terry screaming, I'm going to miss the farmer's market.
Scary Terry was great. One of the things that I discovered in 2016 was Last Week Tonight, which is not for everybody, especially if you're a Republican. And the facts are, when a comedy show does facts, it's not really news. You shouldn't really use it as news. It's basically there for comedy purposes. So take the facts with a pinch of salt. But I love the package of it. I love the delivery of it. And I think that John Oliver, he's so much better on Last Week Tonight. And he was so much better on, what's it, Jon Stewart's show, The Daily Show, was it? He's so much better on that than he is at stand-up. He's so much better at just sitting behind a desk and delivering something that looks like news, but isn't, than he is at stand-up. He's better at scripted comedy with a little bit of improv in there than he is at just standing on a stage talking to people.
Yeah.
Last Week Tonight was fun. It's the kind of show that you can put on while you're doing something else and just laugh every so often at the ridiculousness of people.
You can't beat a good comedy, though, like that. Like, you know, you just need something to laugh at every now and then.
Yeah, everybody needs something to laugh at every now and then. I agree. Laughter is the best medicine.
Plus, to actually get kind of a little bit political, kind of like how he has a way of taking all these, like, really horrible seeming things.
Yeah.
Like everything Donald Trump does. And sort of, he makes it okay. He makes it funny, makes us think that maybe, just maybe, we're not all going to die in a nuclear fire.
Yeah.
Which again, we absolutely all are going to do. This is it. These are the end times.
Yes, they are. Because I've just seen a picture of Dave Schwimmer in American Crime Story, and my God, what is that hair?
That is Rob Kardashian hair. Which, hey, there's another thing that was great this year.
Oh?
American Crime Story.
I thought you were going to go with Stranger Things.
No, well, like I said on the show, I kind of wasn't that big a fan of Stranger Things.
Okay.
Like, it was perfectly all right. It's just, yeah, didn't really buy into all the hype.
Yeah, I suppose. I've been trying to think of good British TV shows, but it's difficult to think of any that were memorable.
The Last Kingdom this year.
No, I think The Last Kingdom's been going on for a bit, hasn't it?
No, it's only had one series.
It's only had one series? Was it this year?
Yeah, I think it must be. Oh, no, 2015.
Oh, well.
Our first episode was October. Actually, no, because it was on like 6 episodes, so October 10th. 2016, that'll have been.
Ah.
Yeah, that'll have been comfortably 2015. I said 2016 just then, but I meant 2015.
See,
yeah, that was not this year. Oh, that's right, I googled British TV in 2016 earlier and then I've forgotten. Oh, yeah, that's right. Sherlock, that's already been a disappointment of 2016.
Yes. Yes, it was.
You know what would be great?
What?
If maybe we could get an episode of that Sherlock Holmes TV show.
Yeah?
Where Sherlock Holmes actually solves some mysteries.
Yeah.
Like, it's especially egregious now, because he'll solve a whole bunch of mysteries sort of off-screen.
Yes.
Just, like, give you a tantalising taste of, like, maybe a couple of lines talking about something. Mm. Once he does some silly nonsense about Watson's wife, who used to be a secret agent.
What?
God, is ridiculous.
Watson's wife used to be a secret agent.
No, just don't. We're not pulling on that thread, Rob. We're running away from Sherlock. Sherlock is a poopy show for garbage people now.
I heard, though, that last episode was supposed to be good.
Like, it wasn't as bad as the Christmas special.
Yeah.
Like, I think it was kind of begrudgingly okay in a, I think this is as good as it's going to get type way. Line of duty. It was Line of Duty this year.
I don't know.
Yes, it was. It was April 2016.
Was it?
That was... Yeah. Oof, that was very good.
Okay.
I mean, this has kind of just descended to me searching for shows and they said, oh yeah, that was good.
Yeah. For some reason, I just couldn't get into British TV this year. I just felt like I was surrounded by crap. I'll be honest.
Mm.
Things like Broadchurch.
Yeah, I think there's not that much British TV to watch.
One thing that was a disappointment for me, it had a couple of good episodes, but for the most part, I just didn't like it. Black Mirror.
Ah.
It's just, I don't know. It's exactly how you described it, Andrew, when we talked about it on the show before.
Yeah, it is such a mixed bag.
Yeah. And, you know, when you watch the first two seasons of Black Mirror, you set yourself up for season three, but you're setting yourself up for disappointment. And I can't really put it any fairer than that. I actually watched the first two seasons of Black Mirror in the run-up to me watching season three.
Yeah, so did I, because I was so excited for series three.
Yeah, and how many other people did exactly the same thing as us?
It is. Oh, and also, important point I realised on second viewing.
Yeah?
You know the entire history of You?
Yeah?
The guy in that is totally the guy who played Doctor Doom in the terrible Fanfastic film.
Yes, he is.
You are better than that film, Toby Kebbell. So much better than that film.
Anyway, stuff that I'm looking forward to in 2017. Obviously, I'm looking forward to The Defenders.
Yes, I think like Iron Fist and Defenders are kind of my two big things for this year.
Yes. So that's one that I'm actually looking forward to. There was one that caught my attention that I think came out in 2016, but I don't think it's being released.
I know exactly what it is you're thinking of.
Which one?
It's Kevin Can Wait. The new Kevin James comedy series.
Nope. It's Kiefer Sutherland in a series called Designated Survivor.
Oh, yeah. I've kind of seen that on Netflix.
I've seen it on Netflix as well. It's just I never got around to watching it. And there's one that we're going to be featuring pretty soon as well that came out in 2016 called The Young Pope, which looks quite interesting.
Yep. In theory, we're featuring that. Not next show, but the show afterwards.
Yes, in theory.
Yes.
Hmm.
Depending on, you know, how long it takes me to actually... I was going to say get off, not even get off my butt. Just, like, sort of roll over the TV long enough to serve the DVD in and watch it.
One that I am not looking forward to watching this year is Lethal Weapon.
Ah.
That's actually happening.
Yeah. It's a reboot.
No one wants that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I saw the TV reboot of Rush Hour with Pound Shop Jackie Chan and Bargain Basement Chris Tucker, and it just, yeah, there's just no excuse for it.
But yeah, no, I have like seen set pictures. They are like the Chinese action figures of those characters.
Yep, they are. You've seen the set pictures.
Doing that, though. I seem to be doing that with a lot of different films now, like a low budget TV show.
Well, I wouldn't say low budget. A lot of them actually have a pretty good budget for a TV show.
Just not for casting.
I think maybe the problem is that they're casting based on that guy sort of looks a bit like the guy from the film. Not, is this guy a decent actor or not?
Yeah. It's the kind of casting where you would put Michelle Yeoh into the role of Makoto Kusanagi in Ghost in the Shell just because you need somebody who looks oriental.
I mean, I'm confused because you say that like a Ghost in the Shell movie starring Michelle Yeoh wouldn't be awesome.
Oh, sorry, not Michelle Yeoh. Lucy Liu. Sorry. Michelle Yeoh would be awesome in a Ghost in the Shell movie. I got my people wrong. I am sorry. I
mean,
apologize.
Lucy Liu would be there? Because, I mean, she would basically be like the character she was in Kill Bill.
Lucy Liu?
Yeah.
But then again, she could always end up being the character she was in Charlie's Angels as well.
No, there is no Charlie's Angels.
Anyway. Anything else you're looking forward to in 2017?
Apparently there's a new series of Line of Duty, so...
Yes?
Thumbs up for that.
Andy?
Also, I realised Andy hasn't actually said anything yet, and I just cut him off, and then cut him off again to explain the fact that I cut him off. I'm going to stop talking now forever.
Well, I'm looking forward to watching something which starts...
Ah, surprise, I'm going to keep talking.
13th of January.
You have to go ahead.
13th of January, so not long. Not going out.
Oh.
It's back for another eight episode series starting on the 13th of Friday, the 13th of January.
That's the Lee Mack one, isn't it?
Yes. And it's set 7 years after the last series.
See, I got confused because I saw a trailer for this on BBC and it had Lee Mack and it had Hugh Dennis. And so I got confused. I thought, hang on, is Not Going Out doing a crossover with Outnumbered? What's going on?
No, Hugh Dennis was in the last series.
Did you see that Christmas special they did of Outnumbered? Those children are old now. They're like adults. How much time has passed? I'm so scared that I'm going to grow old.
Yep.
But anyway, this will make you feel old as well then, Andrew. The new series of Not Going Out is 11 years since the first series of Not Going Out.
And 11 years?
11 years. 2006 was the first.
Jesus.
And, this seems to have a Married with Children-esque feel to it. It's set, they've moved into a house, they've got two kids, and basically this series is how they cope with that.
Also, Andrew, it's no longer Jesus, it is now Elrond.
Oh, yeah, I saw that story.
We talked about that on the Geek Show yesterday. On that note, shall we call it a day there?
Yeah, I think so.
We are at the end of the show, but if you want to catch up with all our previous shows, you can find them on Mixcloud and YouTube and various other places like that. And a normal service will resume on the next episode, so look out for it. Until then, I have been Rob.
I've been Andy.
And I've been Andrew.
We'll see you all later.
Thanks for listening.